Well, good morning and welcome everyone to Live Dharma Sunday. This is Reverend Koyo Kubose here in Coarse Cove, California. No matter where you're calling from, I'm so glad you joined us. Well, we have a treat today for our Dharma Glimpse, which will be given by Bioyo Burkhart. She lives in Aurora, Illinois, which is a suburb of Chicago. And she's a recent graduate of our lay ministry program. And she's going through a lot of changes in her life. She, for a long time, many years, had run a yoga center in Hawaii. And then a few years ago, she came back to the mainland. And then she decided to pursue her long love of music. And then she wanted to go back to school and study music. And so that's what she's doing now. And she wants to, I told her to, you know, everybody, all the lay ministers contribute in their own ways, their own, what's going on in their life, their own bliss. And I said, well, Buddhist music, that area. And so planting that seed, and she says she has in her mind down the road to compose a Bright Dawn theme song, something like this. So we had that to look forward to. But she is studying music, and I want to introduce her Dharma Glimpse in, so that you'll know what to expect when I introduce it. She's going to just start out with some music that she's playing. And then she's going to talk about what she's doing. You know, Dharma Glimpse is always personal, reflects personal life experiences. And then she's going to end with music without any words after that. So for today's Dharma Glimpse, Bioyo Burkhart.
Good morning and welcome to my Dharma Glimpse. As some of you may already know, I am a student majoring in music. Last fall, when I returned to college, I joined the choir and was exposed to some wonderful choral music. One of my favorites that we performed that semester was a piece called Sleep by Eric Whitaker. Eric is a famous and extremely talented choral composer who has his own performing choir ensemble in London. Since I learned of his work, I visit his website from time to time to keep up with what he is doing. Recently, I learned of his groundbreaking new project called Virtual Choir. This is a concept in which people from all over the world can video themselves singing on a webcam while being directed by Eric himself from a virtual conductor window on his website. Everyone sends in their part, and then it is performed online at some date in the future. This idea was sparked by a young girl who sent Eric a video of herself singing Sleep. She told him how much she loved his music and how it touched her deeply. Her message to him was so genuine and heartwarming that he wondered if it could be possible to connect with others by the same technology. This is how the virtual choir was born. To me, this is a perfect example of how music connects us all. This teenage girl reached out to someone across the globe to express her gratitude of that connection, and she sparked an entire movement of sharing. So many of us tend to hold back expressing ourselves to others for fear of rejection. This young girl was unafraid and teaches us how simple genuineness can change the world. I wanted to play Eric's piece, Sleep, for you, but because Blog Talk Radio does not allow copywritten music to be used, I have opted to read it as a poem. The background on this piece is as follows. A friend of Eric's contacted him and wanted to commission a choral piece in memory of her parents who had recently passed away. She wanted it to be set to Robert Frost's poem, Stopping by the Woods on a Snowy Evening. Because he thought this poem was in public domain, he proceeded. After writing and performing the piece, the Robert Frost estate threatened to sue, and he could no longer use the poem. In order to continue to perform the music, he asked poet Charles Anthony to write a new poem in the same structure using the same key words. The result was phenomenal, and I encourage you to listen to Sleep on the web so you can experience it with the music. I will now read Eric Whitaker's Sleep. The evening hangs beneath the moon, a silver thread on darkened dune. With closing eyes and resting head, I know that sleep is coming soon. Upon my pillow, safe in bed, a thousand pictures fill my head. I cannot sleep, my mind's aflight, and yet my limbs seem made of lead. If there are noises in the night, a frightening shadow, flickering light, then I surrender unto sleep, where clouds of dream give second sight. What dreams may come, both dark and deep, of flying wings and soaring leap, as I surrender unto sleep. As I surrender unto sleep. As I surrender unto sleep. To sleep. 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 Sleep.
Very much. We get very creative Dharma glimpses, don't we? And, you know, speaking about music, I remember Dr. Tai Uno in one of his books, he had a quote, "Music heard so deeply, it is not heard at all." Maybe this was in a chapter on non-duality, or, you know, there's no singer or song, there's just singing, you know, there's the world of experience, of oneness. And, you know, if you ever watch musicians perform, especially close up, and they're really lost in their music. It's a wonderful thing. They're transported. Whether it's playing the cello or banging out Mozart on the piano. You see musicians and wham. And there's a Dharma lesson there. An inspiration that each of us should fall in love with each present moment. Wow, you know, that's sounds kind of strange, but to lose yourself, to give yourself to it 100%, this is the real purity, essence of Buddhist life or living. And music is a great example because it's so immediate. Boom, you become one with the music. Bam. Well, for today's Dharma talk, you know, I had various possibilities. Early Sunday morning, this is when I sort of decide, narrow down my what I want to talk about. And, you know, we do this every week, and you're my intimate audience, so to speak. It's not like I'm being given a theme for a particular occasion or being a guest speaker. This is just my own forum, my personal forum, so to speak. And I feel even more relaxed since I'm not in front of actual people, physical people, and I'm just in my own Brighton administrative office here in front of the computer talking, and I know there are people out there listening, but it feels very personal to me, and I don't feel any particular pressure to deliver something that's tightly organized and well themed and, you know, dramatic. I have a dream address or talk or something like this, so I feel very comfortable. But all of the possibilities I was thinking of talking today, I said, you know, it'll be a talk. And yet, the way I am, I want to talk about the most recent thing in my experience. You know, what's going on in my life. So I always opt for that. So I just want to talk about what happened yesterday and this morning too, just a few minutes ago. So it's sort of a stream of consciousness. So just please accompany my flow, just enjoy, adjust your expectations, just sitting around shooting the breeze. It's not an organized lecture. Yesterday, I went to speak at the Cortez Buddhist Church. They have an annual, what they call a post-harvest service. And the church is located in near Turtlock, California. So it's about maybe an hour and a half drive north of us in Central California, and maybe about a couple of hours south of San Francisco. And it's in a rural area, and they recently celebrated their 88th anniversary. It's a small temple, and the way Buddhist Churches of America, their history was, in California, there was a lot of small rural towns. Most of them were in truck farming, and the people were not concentrated in the cities. So people were spread out. So many of the communities had their own small churches. Some of them later on consolidated and so forth. The demographics have changed and assimilation has occurred. So there's not very many. They cannot support themselves, and many of these small temples are sort of dwindling in a way. They're not what they used to be. But they're being born in another kind of way too, and they have their own charm. You know, it's not like the architecturally big temple in the city. Very modest Buddhist church in a rural area. Drive and many of the congregation, you know, their fathers or even grandfathers started their farm or their ranch, and they're still carrying it on. And it has a different atmosphere. Not like in a big city and, you know, office, white-collar workers. It's very laid back. And so we arrived there for a Saturday morning service. And I met a minister who will be conducting the service, because they don't have their own, many of these churches, they don't have their own resident minister. Minister from a larger neighboring church supervises perhaps several of these smaller places that maybe have a service only once a month. Okay. And so the supervising minister was someone that I had not met before, but I knew known of him, his name and something about him, through mutual friends, and the same with him for me. And I was very impressed with him, and he just became a minister, and he said he wanted to specialize. His calling was what he called blue-collar Buddhism. And he even had a hat, a baseball hat, that said had blue-collar Buddhism on it. And he said, you know, there's a lot of people that don't read. Joe Sixpack, you know, guy, you know, blue-collar people. That's going to be his specialty. Who he wants to reach out to and communicate with. And he's a very down-to-earth person. And so we enjoyed meeting each other and sharing our mutual contacts that we had. And this, of course, is beautiful. And so after the service, they have a luncheon. And of course, all potluck luncheons are the best. All kinds of very great food. Everyone brings their specialty, of course, you know. But what struck me is that people, what happens after the service, when you're sharing life together, is a tremendous thing. People, one by one, they come up to me and share something. You know? And I was sort of shocked or floored with the fact that, you know, I had written a book called Bright Dawn in 2004. And I was surprised that a lot of people read it or have read it. I don't know this congregation. I don't know anybody. And during the social hour afterwards, someone would come up and say, oh, I liked your book. I loved your book. And they would tell me parts that they liked. So I know that they read it. I like the rocks. I like the rocks. Except one thing is, I just can't let go of my rocks. Where you do pebble offerings. I mentioned that in my book. Where you can go on a pilgrimage, or anytime you go on a vacation, you can take rocks and make them as offerings. When you see a beautiful sea of nature, you leave a gratitude offering. Wow. And it's just kind of a simple mindfulness ritual that it's kind of nice. Rocks don't pollute and they don't leak or break or and things like this. Or someone said, oh, I like to flush it. And I knew right away they're talking about toilet gusho. And another lady said, I just came back from Skokie, which is where we lived prior to moving to California. We lived there for 25 years in Skokie, Illinois, suburb north of Chicago. And she says, yeah, and I went on your trail, your lakefront trail, which is the Python book is about that. And it's under construction now in that lakefront. It's all changed. And we went to find this tree and that place. And I said, oh, geez. I said, why did you go to Skokie? Why were you there? I said, oh, we went to visit my son. And he's an athletic trainer. And this and that. And now he's been working for the Chicago Bulls. And so he's living in Skokie. Of course, this brought back a lot of memories from our glory years with Michael Jordan and so forth. And so you get all these interconnections with people coming up and saying, yeah, and then I remember visiting your father's church on the south side and so forth. Now, being a rural community, I guess a lot of the members, they brought something as sort of like omiyage or gifts to the minister. This was spread out on a table. And it looked like I thought they were going to have a raffle. They had as prizes. They had all these bags and packages, and there were some daikon, large radishes, white radishes, and different things. And then they said, well, for your ministers, we're going to give you these things. So show me where your car is, and we're going to load it all up. I said, oh, wow. So they did. And when I came home, looked at everything, that area specializes in almonds and, of course, persimmons. So a lot of different persimmons, a lot of kinds of almonds. And one man, he had given three daikon, huge white radishes. One was about a yard long, thick as my forearm, and weighed about 3 pounds. I had three of these large daikon, and you can use daikon in a lot of ways, but I thought about making tsukemono, which is pickled vegetables. And you use daikon to make what's called takwan. It's made with vinegar and it has a yellow color, turns yellow. I think in the old days they put some kind of yellow flower in there. But Takuan's always yellow. And then it's put in jars. And it's very sour, you know, because of the vinegar. It's pickled. And I had never made Takuan Skemono before. So I said, "Oh, I got so much daikon now. I guess I'm gonna try to make this takuan." And I got a recipe from a Central Valley relative here. Betty Maibo is very famous for a lot of her recipes. And of course, when you use her recipe, it never comes out as good as hers. So I, what you do is you slice up into bite-sized pieces, and then you put them into a big container, and then you make this sauce that has vinegar and salt and sugar and turmeric, spice. You boil it up. Then you pour it over and coat up all the daikon pieces, and I covered it and let it sit overnight. We woke up this morning. Adrian and I were walking over from the bedroom over to the living room kitchen area, and she says, "Wow, the whole house got smelled up." I said, "Oh, yeah." Yeah. And that statement just elicited all kinds of associations for me and set the tone for this today's Dharma talk. Because Takuan is very smelly, you know. And it's sort of like the Korean version of their kimchi. I don't know if you're familiar with these things, but if you are, I'm sure your nose is crinkling up. I remember humorous stories where it flashed in my mind when we bought our first Honda Odyssey minivan in Morton Grove, Castle Motors. And it happened to be a Korean salesman. And we were going out to look at the car. And I guess I was feeling kind of chipper. And I asked him, you know, his ethnicity. And he said Korean. And I was kind of, and I just kind of blurted out. I just kind of jerked back with my hands up. And I said, "Oh, kimchi!" You know. And right away, he jerked back with his arms up, and he said, "Takuan," you know. And we just laughed, and something about when a smell goes all over. You know, the reason a smell goes all over is what they call the law of physical entropy. A smell doesn't stay right where it's at. It just spreads out all over. And I often used to talk about this with regard to one of the teachings in incense burning, where if you come into a temple, the front door, if incense has been burned way over in the near the altar, you'll know, because the perfume spreads all over to every nook and cranny of the temple. And I use this as a teaching of karmic effects. If you do something good in the community, you don't know. It goes all over. A teacher doesn't know. You know, you influence one young person's life, and that person goes on to do all kinds of things. You don't know where your influence stops. It's like entropy. You know, It goes all over. Okay? That's the way it is. You give somebody, a stranger, a smile in the morning on the way to work, and you don't know. You might have made that person's day. And he goes on to influence other people and so forth. So even if it's a stinky smell, and there's sort of an inner joke there, a private joke about, you know, the stink of Buddhism. You know, sometimes they say, hey, you don't want to preach Buddhism too much. Like, it gets stinky. It should be natural. Okay? You don't want somebody over serious and, you know, expounding the doctrines and everything. But some of us, that's what we do. You know, my minister, that's what we do. So I kind of, sometimes we don't want to be too full of ourselves and think that we're, you know, a perfume. Huh? Maybe my calling is Takuan Dharma, you know, that because, and then there's the association there when, because that toilet gusho, people really relate to that because that's everyday dharma, you know. Life can be full of messy things too, stinky things too. That's real too. Down to earth, blue-collar Buddhism. So some people can maybe be so skillful and they could have sweet perfume to perfume the world, but, well, maybe my destiny, my what I'm stuck with is to stink up the world with my own stink of Buddhism. And so I thought about, well, you know, in our lay program, we talk about using code words, words that come out of our own experience and living, and kind of a light, nice abbreviation for a teaching that reminds us of something that came out of our own experience, okay, our own Dharma glimpse. And so I thought, hey, I have a good code phrase for myself, Takuan Dharma. And this encapsulates what I experienced yesterday and this morning. That I should go forth and people will, you know, I shouldn't be surprised if all kinds of strangers that I don't know about have read my book or been influenced and, I'm going to do more, make more Takuan. Thank you very much. Well, this ends today's broadcast. And I hope I didn't stink up the airways too much. I thank Bioyo Burkhart for the beautiful music as a counterbalance to my stinky Takuan story. And I thank all of you for joining in and smiling with me today. You have a beautiful smile.